found out Jamila added. And I'm truly grateful for another day clean. I want to thank the CPR CNA 31 program and committee for asking me to come on and share my experience with the Hope. And thank you, Sheila, for sharing your experience on the third step. Wow. This is our regional convention. My area is South Potomac. My home group is the Steps to Life group on Bach and Livingston Road in Oxon Hill. We meet there every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. It's a 12-step meeting. My clean date is July 11th, 1993, and haven't found it necessary to go back. Let me just say, when I got here, I was broken, hurt, and confused. I had run out of all fresh ideas, because I always had an idea. I always had a good idea. And the idea gonna pan out just the way I planned it, just the way I thought it. And everything gonna be just the way I, you know, had set it out to be. By the time I got here, I had so many bottoms, because I was always going to treatment to mom, going to treatment to mom, going to detox to mom. I was always going to mom. Just need to get this last blast. And then I'm going to go to treatment. And I had an aunt who worked in treatment. And she was always telling me, Pooh, when you're ready, just call me. And I would always call her after I got high. You know, I really need to get myself together, auntie. I really need to go to treatment. I really need to come. And she would tell me every single time, when you're ready, just let me know. My last run was, witnesses say, I was in my car, riding 70, 80 miles per hour, down an avenue, head on into another car at an intersection, under the influence of crack, PCP, and alcohol. I got out of the hospital on crutches, looking. I grew up in a neighborhood with my friends who grew up in the lifestyle. And it was fun until it became deadly. And back in the 80s and the 90s, when the city was under siege, I was under siege with it, me and all of my friends. And back then, you know, chivalry was so good because the guys were so nice and, you know, they mind giving you and treating you. So, you know, manipulation was high on my agenda. You know, I just felt like I had it going on. But it started to get deadly. And a lot of my friends started to disappear as a direct result of the disease of addiction. And it was a girl in my neighborhood who was an alcoholic. And this particular day, she went to the ice cream truck and she didn't have her Red Bull. So, you know, I asked her, because, you know, every time I saw her, she had the Red Bull. And when I didn't see her, I thought it was, you know, strange. I walked up to her, I said, Andrea, where your Red Bull? And she said, girl, I don't drink no more. I go to these meetings down on the avenue. Do you want to go? I went back and sat on the step, because I wasn't ready. You know, and I had a series of bottoms because I was a very strong-willed addict. I really felt like if I could just think my way through. Boy, if I could just maybe get high on the weekends. Maybe if I just get high on my birthday. On your birthday. Or if anybody had half, you know, you got half, because that was the conversation back then. You got half, we good. You know, I got five, you got five, we good. And, but I was a very ambitious young girl, and an addiction caused me to lose my way. And I remember getting an apartment. I had this really good job. Yeah, I was a functioning addict, you know, quote, functioning addict for a minute. And I would get high, and get to a bottom, and then I start all over again. Get high, get to a bottom, then I start all over again. And this particular time, I feel like I got it together, so I get an apartment and a party at my house. You know, I'm the only one in the crew right now. Got apartment, so you know, I'm really thinking I'm it. You know, so everybody in my house, you come, you gotta have half. Gotta have $5 or something, you know, to bring to the party, right? So we in there getting high. And you know, people come in, you just wanna know what they got to contribute, you know. I ain't gotta know your name and all that kind of stuff. Just do you have $5. You know. So at the end of the night, this one guy, you know, he doubled back. You know, everybody gone, he doubled back. He come back, he said, "You want to continue the party?" I said, "Surely I do. You ain't got to ask me that twice." So he came in. He said, as we got in there, we had a good time. He said, "I'll be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock. Okay. But then I got a dilemma, because I got to go to work tomorrow. But how am I going to go to work and do coming? And surely enough, he came at 12 o'clock. I did not go to work because he said he was coming at 12, and he came at 12. And guess what? At the end of that night, he said, or at the end of that day, because he would come on his lunch break. I lived right down the street from where he worked. He said, "I'll be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock. I said, "Okay. You ain't got to tell me twice." And I did not go to work. Because dude coming at 12 o'clock. And he came, we get high. This went on for a while. So I finally get to work. And so they said, "You can either do two things. You can either resign or be terminated." And I, you know, every time somebody would give me some information that I was, you know, I was like, resign? I mean, terminate me for what? You know, denial has always been very, you know, that's always been one of my problem areas, is denial. Because I could never come to realization on my own. So they said, "Well, you haven't been to work." And I thought maybe I had leave. "You had exhausted all of your leave, Jamila. You don't have any leave to use. You're in leave without pay." Okay, so my auntie calls me, and she tells me, "Pooh, the people call me and say, you gotta move or they gonna put you out." I said, "Put me out? Yeah, because you hadn't paid rent in 3 months. I was in denial again, shocked. Why would they put me out? She said, "Yeah, you gotta move or they gonna put you out." So I decided to take all of my stuff down to my sister's house. By this time, I'm in a relationship with my son's father, who's in the lifestyle. And, you know, it's a what you could do for me, what I could do for you, arrangements kind of relationship. And, we had my son, and by this time I was just tired. It was like, you know what, it's do something different or die. So I'm down at the Monument Grounds. So I got the kids, because I love kids. Anybody know me, know I love kids. I get the kids, we gonna have a good time. So I love kids. So we down by the Monument Grounds, and I'm telling you, it was a divine intervention. Say, "You can go this way and live, or you can go this way and die." Real simple. And my life had flashed before me, and I was thinking about all my friends that passed and the things that had happened. And I saw that girl again who was going to the meeting down on the avenue. And she took me to a meeting. And I tell you, I walked in that meeting, and that man who was the chairperson of that meeting, he said, "If you're in this meeting and you're confused, you're in the right place. I thought, oh my goodness, how did he know I had been confused my whole childhood? How did he know that? And so I kept going to that meeting. It was a 1-2-3 step meeting. And I was hearing all kinds of stuff about my problem. They said, we don't care about how much or how little you have, who your connections were, or any of that. But only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. Ooh. They said drugs was just a symptom of the problem. I said, oh. They said, keep coming back and more will be revealed. They said, get a sponsor, get a home group, and get with somebody who you can share honestly with. And I got with this girl. That girl had 2 years clean. I'll never forget her. She's the part of my foundation in this recovery. She took me everywhere. My first convention was Shelter from the Storm, right here, Ocean City. And I remember asking her, you know, the third step said we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. So I asked her, I said, what did you do? What did you do? And she said she turned over her thinking and her behavior. That I had to put that on the shelf. You know, a lot of stuff was on the shelf. All the information and everything I heard was on the shelf, and some of the stuff was on the back of the shelf. Because it was no application going on when I first got here. It was all about a good time and getting to them conventions where they say I can have a good time without the use of drugs and alcohol. And I was going to the dances, and I met somebody in here who was, oh, he was in the lifestyle too, in the rooms, okay. And so I said, oh, just my kind of person. And I'm going to tell you, an incident happened that caused me to take a look at myself for real. And it caused me to pause, to ask myself, did I want to be a clean addict? Or did I want to be a recovering addict? Right? And I remember asking, telling my sponsor, you know, that I was hanging out with this guy, and she said, oh, okay, so what you gonna do? You know, the people in the rooms always ask me, what are you going to do? You know, just like my son's father, who he told me, he said, you're letting those people brainwash you. Oh, I wouldn't tell the people, because y'all were the people. I said, my son's father said, you all are brainwashing me. They said, tell your son's father, you needed a brainwashing. Oh, I wouldn't tell them. I said, the people said, everything that I needed courage to do was going to be what the people said. Because my son's father was my biggest enabler. How am I going to tell him anything of my own volition? I'm not going to be able to tell him nothing. I'm going to tell him what the people said. I'm going to tell him what the people said. And I'm going to tell him what my sponsor said. And I'm going to tell him what everybody else told me to do other than what I'm going to do on my own. So when I went to the meeting one time and I was complaining about my son's father, they said, we weren't hit by him. They said, we want to know about what you're going to do. And it dawned on me, oh, I'm supposed to be doing something. I'm responsible for my recovery. And now this is the information that I was hearing, right? So I kept going to the meeting. I was hanging out with that girl. And I got a service. And, you know, this third tradition, I'm going to tell you, I have a basic text. One thing that the old timers told us early on, you know, was get the blue book. Get that blue book and read it cover to cover. And get the guide to local service, Jamila. So those were the two books that I got and read. And I understand now what they were talking about in terms of being an informed member. Not about what somebody tells you, but about what you've read in the literature and the edification that you get from it for yourself. Because somebody can tell you a whole lot of stuff. And it might just be their opinion, it might be their thought, and it might even be their experience. But reading is what brought revelation for me and some self-awareness that I needed to get on my own. And so when I got into service, I started to really learn about Narcotics Anonymous for real. Because the steps is what helped me to change and to be a part of something that was greater than me. Because first of all, I'm the one greater than myself. I'm the power greater than Jamila. But then all I had to do was look at all them bottoms, okay, and ends that I was experiencing clean. So when I told my son's father, and I ain't giving no ultimatum, because, you know, it was like I really wanted him to, like, come in recovery too. But he wanted to be where he wanted to be, and I was like, okay. They say don't do, when you don't know what to do, don't do nothing. Don't make no major decisions. So I thought I needed to stay with my son's father, because I wasn't supposed to be making no major decisions. And like, I'm just cutting him off, because man, I'm in recovery, and he needs to get himself together. And so I stayed in that relationship 1 year. I'm clean. I'm going to meetings. I tell you, I still talk to my son, Bob, telling my son, Bob, I'm going to these meetings, and I'm taking our son, too. And I just kept going. And I just kept going 2 years. I'm still in a relationship with my son, father, and he's still doing what he's doing. And 3 years come around, and I said, you know what? It is done. Because I was hearing what people were saying in the meeting that was giving me the courage to decide for myself. What are you going to do about your own situation, Jamila? Not, you can't help your son's father right now, because you got to help the dummy. Help the dummy. That's what they told me. And I got so offended with the dummy. I said, the dummy? I said, first of all, I had gone to high school. You know, I had gone to college. I was like, dummy? They said, yeah, dummy. They said, nobody rides in their car 78 miles per hour down an avenue and head on into another car. That's dumb. I was like, oh, okay. I had to start listening to what the people were saying. Because see, like Sheila was saying, my thinking would always get me in a bottom. And not only in the bottom, but it would get me caught up in patterns of behavior that would cause me to get in the bottom. So I had to start becoming open to what people were saying. So I just kept going. And I finally, when I got into service, service is what really helped me to see that this is greater than me, that I am part. You know, my sponsor told me, she said, when you go to the beach and you scoop up a hand of sand, and I'll never forget this, she said, you see the little granular part, that little tiny little one, that's your part, you know. And that let me know that all of what I had been hearing about, there are no big eyes or little U's, you know, we're all equal, we all have whatever we bring to the diversity that we're a part of. Right? And acceptance, patience, and tolerance, and empathy, and carrying the message to the still suffering addict. So I had become a part, I had surrendered and had become a part of something that's greater than myself. And I started to learn about our common welfare should come first. Like, I should be concerned about a still suffering addict. I should be concerned about the struggles of a still suffering addict. I should be available for the still suffering addict, whether this person is in the rooms or outside the rooms. And so when I went to the first stuffing party for the convention, and I walked into the room, y'all, and I'm telling you, the room was so, I think I had maybe about 3 years clean. I walked in that room and I said, oh my goodness. They said, Jamila, this is what we do when we get ready to prepare for the convention. We pack packages and we, you know, prepare, you know, so that when people come to the convention, they have their packages and stuff and ready. And I thought, wow, this is so big. And then I started just to become more interested. You know, I just become, my desire just got, it just got a little bit better. Like, man, I could do this. I can live life on life terms clean. Like, I could enjoy my life without the use of drugs and alcohol. Like, I really can. Like, who goes to the movies and don't have a joint? Like, who goes to a dance and don't have something to drink? Like, The people in Narcotics Anonymous, that's what they do. And I said, oh, I think I could do this. So I started going to conventions. Man, I started going to conventions. I went to my first world convention in Baltimore. That was my first world convention. Then from Baltimore, I went to the convention in St. Louis, Missouri. Then from there, I went to San Jose, California. And then I was in Philadelphia. And then I was just going places without the use of drugs and alcohol. I said, oh, girl, you doing it, girl. Because I had to encourage myself. Because, see, my family thought I was still using 2 years clean. And I wouldn't tell the people at the meeting. I said, you know, my folks still think that I'm using. You know what they told me? That old timer said, I mean, he looked me dead in my eye. He said, to thine own self be true. You don't have to prove nothing to nobody. And his question was, have you used? I said, no. He said, well, that's all that matters. I took that. I said, oh, I ain't got to impress nobody. I can be clean and live my life, whether you believe it or not. To thine own self be true. And so I stayed in the service, and I started understanding the importance about this third tradition, that the only requirement for membership is a desire. And no one can decide that level but me. So if I am sharing that, you know, I need to be here, and I need your help, the empathy in our membership shows up. Somebody come to a meeting, and what do we tell them? You get to the meeting, we'll make sure you get home. And I was talking to a young lady who had asked me to be her sponsor, and she's hungry, you know, but she doesn't have a car, you know, so it's okay. Sometimes if I'm able to get her, I get her. If not, I tell her, get to the meeting and raise your hand and say, I'm here at the meeting and I need a ride home. And I guaranteed her, because that's what we do. We fan the flame of desire. So if you get to the meeting, guess what? You're going to get home. Because that's part of the culture that we are a part of here in Narcotics Anonymous. We help one another. So I want to read this. It says in third tradition, we realize that recovery is a reality and that life without drugs is better than we ever imagined. That's exciting news. I never imagined that I would be standing here. Let me tell you something. When I was using, I always felt like, you know what? I want to stop. Didn't know how to stop. I remember one time I was telling my young sister, she said, and you know, my family had always looked up to me, because like I shared with you all, I was a very ambitious young girl. And I had lost my way, man. I was so hurt and disappointed. I had disappointed my family. And I told my sister, she said, you can't stop. I said, no, I can't. I can't stop. I felt like I was in jail. We open our doors to other addicts, hoping that they can find what we have found. I believe in making myself available for the next person who comes through that door. People come to our home group. I don't care where they come from or none of that. I try to make myself available. And I'm not saying I'm saying the group. The group. We are responsible for making ourselves available for people. But we know that only those who have a desire to stop using and want what we have to offer will join us in our way of life. I gotta want it. You know, I'm grateful for my sponsor. I'm grateful for a new level of surrender, because when I start to look at who I am as a person and all of the possibilities. Like, y'all told me I could have a castle or a hut, right? But it wasn't about a castle or hut for things for me, because I came into rooms with money in the bank. You understand? I had a brand new vehicle, still living in my apartment that you all told me was a crack house. So it wasn't about stuff for me. Because if I could work, I could get some stuff. So when the old timer said, this is an inside job, you got a clean house, you know what I did? I went home, and I got to cleaning up. Oh, yes, I did. I went home, and I got cleaning, and I came back, and I told the old timer, I said, you said this is an inside job and clean house, and I went home and cleaned up. And they said, no, Jamila, that's not the cleaning we're talking about. We're talking about step work and cleaning out those old, useless patterns of behavior. Whew. But I had to keep going through to get to. I had to keep going through to get to. And I remember being 3 years clean before I had gotten here, and I hardly share about it because it's not really about anything as far as I'm concerned, but it's a part of my story. But before I got here, I had come into a lot of money in a medical malpractice, and I was still using. See, I was still using, and everybody who was around me was okay. Because I'm the kind of person, if you with me, we good. If I got it, you got it. And 3 years clean, when I got in here, that same girl, and I told that girl, you know, they say you got to give us somebody you can tell them dark secrets, tell some to talk to somebody who you can share honestly and openly with. And I shared with that girl about some stuff. And I told her about that lawsuit. And you know what she said to me? She said, Jamila, she said, you better do something with that money or you're going to hit a financial bottom in recovery. I said, oh. But I grew up poor, grew up in poverty, didn't know anything about managing no money, getting no money, or any of that. Because my mother was on welfare and scraped to try to make sure that we had food on the table. You know what I'm saying? So, but one thing I do remember is my mother, you know, valuing what she had. And she would tell me, if I give this 50 cent, you hold on to a quarter, you spend the quarter. Don't spend both of them and then come ask me for anything. So I started to go back to the things that I had learned. You know, my great-grandmother, you know, like my sister Sheila here, I had the privilege of knowing my great-grandmother and being loved and cared for by her. My great-uncle, I had an auntie who was an educator and made that a point to me, get your education. And so when I came into the rooms and I start to, you know, take a seat and start to be able to look at that castle or hut on a whole nother level, you know, that I needed to develop my spirit because, like I said, I was broken, hurt, and confused when I got here. At 3 years clean, I listened to what that girl said, and I bought a house. And this May would be 21 years that I've been there. With the help of this fellowship and people. Because one thing I used to hear when the old timer said, because, you know, they said, well, Jamila, you know, take the program serious, but don't take yourself too serious. Well, I've been serious the whole time since I've been here. I've been serious about the program, and I've been serious with myself. Now, that might be something that I have to work on, because sometimes I can be too serious and too edgy, you know, and not being able to have balance. But I'm very compassionate and very passionate about what I become involved with. This is what the program is affording me. So when I decided that my son's father and I weren't going to make it, and we went our separate ways, he ended up going into the penitentiary, and I was left to take care of my son. And I remember going to the meeting saying, my son's father is, he locked up. And I started to feel real bad because I grew up without a father, and now my son is getting ready to grow up without his father. And when he got out of jail, out of the penitentiary, they shipped him back because he was a foreigner. But the program says never alone. See? Because my disease, though, would tell me I'm the only one in the whole wide world. There's nobody else in the whole wide world who raised their son alone. That would the disease tell me. But I went to the meeting and shared about how I was feeling. They said, never alone, Jamila. And I will never forget it. I decided I need to go back to school because I was going to have to take care of my son. Ain't nobody going to be able to take care of him. I could take care of my son. And I went back to school. And I was like, oh my. After all the boat I smoked, and after all the crack I smoked, I said, I can comprehend a little bit. But I had to keep reading, though, over and over and over again, and getting with the people who knew more than I did. Yeah, because that's what y'all taught me. They said, can't be the blind leading the blind, Jamila. You got to get with people who know more than you. You can't be the sharpest knife in the drawer. Because I think I know some. I think I know some. So I have to get with people who know more than I do and be humble enough and teachable enough and open enough, because that's what helps me to get to the next level, is when I'm teachable and humble and open enough. So when I went back and got my bachelor's degree in this program, and they said more opportunities if you get your master's, you know, I'm in my head, oh, okay, I can do that too. Because y'all telling me I can, and I'm watching people who did. So I went back and got my master's. Now, have I arrived? No. I have just decided. I have made a conscious decision to live my life peaceably, manageably, so that I'm not, you know, when I was listening to the old timer saying, I'm going to share this because I got to bring it to a close. I heard balance, but my spirit wasn't there. And this is what I'm realizing about this, you know, about growth in the program. If my spiritual development is not at a place where I can understand or receive what you're trying to impart to me, then I'm going to negate it. Or I'm just going to have to put it on the shelf again. So thanks be to God that I'm open enough to want to listen to what somebody has to say that's going to help me in my process. I can't help myself. I can't help myself. The group has always been the vehicle for me. The group has always been the vehicle. It helps me in my daily life and recovery. Every single day, I have to decide not to use. See, I can't say, well, I was clean last week, and I was clean yesterday, and, you know. No, every single day, and I've been in this process 23 years, I have to decide every single day to not use. I have young people in my family. They turn up and you know, all kinds of stuff. I had a niece 21, turned 21 years old, and you know, they always want me to come, you know, come on, auntie. Okay. I'm gonna hang with y'all for a little while. Just a little while. Cause then I start getting on their nerves. Cause I start talking about, you know, recovery, and y'all know y'all ain't got no business. Mind your business. Leave them alone. They doing what 21 year olds do. You blowing they high.
Nobody want to hear about no recovery, and they trying to turn that girl. Get out of there. That's what you do. But keep showing up. See? And I always say, anybody want to go to the meeting? I ask my nieces, y'all want to go? Round the holidays, because we have a good time. Oh, I got to stop for a minute. I'll see y'all when I get back. So I'm grateful for a new way of life. I'm grateful for being in this process. And I'm grateful for the life that Narcotics Anonymous has given me, because I have a life today. Thanks for letting me share.